Jordan Maxwell joins us this hour. He is with us once a month and a little often, more often than that this month, we're glad to say. He's got the time. Jordan is usually with us on the third Monday of each month. He's here tonight. Welcome back, my friend. How are you?
Well, thank you very much, Jeff, for having me back on. And I'm sorry I missed you the first hour. I would like to have been with you the first hour, too, but I wasn't here.
So, no problem.
I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, well, you sound very much there, and that's not a problem. DV was here the first hour tonight.
Who was this?
DV Kidd. And she's just really wonderful. You might want to catch her in the archives if you can.
Oh, I will, for sure.
I'm just looking at a... I pulled up the weather page during the break. I like to look at the satellite. It just, you wonder now how my... You used to think, well, gee, Mother Nature can still do what she wants, but now with HARP, you know she can't. And
yeah.
Anyway, still watching the big picture. And I'm watching this, I guess, archetypal young 30-something husband and wife at the at their little perfect little breakfast table. And the woman is intense and obviously dominating the conversation. The sound is off. The guy is weak. He has nerdy glasses on. He has a weak kind of a chin. Just the feminization. You can't even imagine this guy. He's holding both hands up now, almost like you hold out your hands when you're begging someone.
Oh, yeah.
And he's got the wedding ring on, and he's a complete wimp. And she's indulging him and trying to act like she's actively listening to what he's saying. And it's despicable. It's absolutely despicable. The imagery of the American male.
Well, now they've even got television shows. The new one's coming on called The Ugly American.
Uh-huh.
Have you seen that one yet?
I don't have TV, my friend. Not for 22 years.
Well, I'll tell you what. You haven't missed anything. But they've got TV shows called The Ugly American. Uh-huh. And they're showing all of the most off-the-wall kind of humans that are here in this country and all the craziness going on.
Well, they'll never run out of material for that.
That should be a big hit because they've got plenty to work with here.
Uh-huh. Well, the guy in the commercial, by the way, apparently rolled over, at least conversationally, because she actually deigned to pour him a cup of coffee, and it turns out to be a Starbucks ad. So they were discussing something about Starbucks over breakfast.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, all right, yeah. Anyway. He had this little nerdy house sweater on, this stupid little blue T-shirt, and this...
Well,
God,
and you know as well as I do that this was all well orchestrated.
Yes.
They did it purposely.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, because that represents America.
And you try and tell a woman anything anymore? It used to be kind of it was a funny figure of speech. The three fastest forms of communication, telegraph, telephone, and tell a woman.
Exactly.
All right, well... Yeah. Now, that's all. You don't do that anymore. They are the boss. You cannot tell most American women anything. They are dressed for combat. They have their combat bras on, plunging décolletage necklines. Their ankles are all turned up with their heeled shoes. Most of them have tattoos, hidden or otherwise. Eye makeup, heavy. They think they're beautiful. They are the antithesis of beauty.
Well, unfortunately, I was hearing that Rockefeller, I think it was Rockefeller, was being interviewed by someone in an article, and they asked, I'm trying to remember where it was, but it has to do with this point.
Hold on, let me say, I got to say something here. Hold on,
yeah.
Hold that thought. For you women out there who are not like that, who are real people, and you men too, you know I'm not talking about you. I just want to be clear on that.
Obviously.
Thank you. Oh, go ahead, please.
Well, but the feminist movement itself, one of the Rockefellers was being interviewed, and just in passing, he explained that the feminist movement was promoted by the Rockefeller family, along with others of their ilk, chiefly because they felt that women could uh, uh, w- women should be paying more taxes. They want more tax money. And so the best way to get more money out of the American public is to put the women to work, because now they got that double taxes. Now they're not only getting the men, now they're getting the women to pay taxes.
Oh, for sure.
And so it was strictly a commerce deal to get women into the marketplace so that they could work and bring in more taxes. That's the name of that tool.
Well, that was certainly a key, or perhaps the key component of it, but the other side of that coin, and there are probably several sides to that one, was the destruction of the American family and the breakdown of morality. And it's amazing how they handed women the power of manhood and yet make them such filthy, vile sex objects in porn.
Yeah,
the world of pornography. What a funny duality that is.
And you know that the seeing a woman presented that way is to me a huge turnoff.
It's undesirable. As you might as well watch barnyard animals.
Absolutely, that's what I feel. I'm totally turned off by seeing women being portrayed sexually. It's something about it that takes all of the interest out of it. You know, it's just very, very blasé. It's in your face, and
well, it's not even blasé. It's pathetic.
I
have no history of porn on my computer. Thanks. I've run into it accidentally over the years, occasionally, not hardcore stuff, but you know, I've seen it years ago, and you've seen one, you've seen them all. I just don't understand. And these poor vapid, imbecilic young females think that they're going to be a celebrity, a movie actress, if they're in porn.
Well, I know. You know, we've heard all those stories about Hollywood, and that's the name of the tune here.
I can't repeat it, but remember what Marilyn Monroe said about she was so tired of all these.
She said, I'm so tired
of all these Jewish Hollywood producers, blah, blah, blah.
Yep.
And that's the price she paid. That's the price they all paid. And if you don't pay it, there are 10,000 more in line waiting at the door who will.
That's exactly right. That's unfortunately, that's the way Hollywood works. But not only do they keep that for themselves, but they're pouring it out into the public trough for everyone else to consume. So,
and look at these
they
programs.
Have poured into the human trough for the feeding of the human race, every kind of filth and degeneracy there is.
Sure.
And it's incredible, because the motion pictures could be a profound influence on the human race for good. Because there have been some extraordinarily brilliant and beautiful movies made that, you know, that impacted people for life.
Mm-hmm.
For good, but unfortunately, too much of it is catering to the baser instincts just for money. And today, I think it's just all basic making money off of sex, drugs, and rock and roll.
Go to any of these very popular teen or 20s movies and watch. Don't even watch the screen. You hardly need to. But watch how the audience reacts to what they are told is something funny. They howl with laughter.
Yep.
And there's nothing funny about it.
They don't realize the laughter in the movie is all canned. That was so extraordinary for me when I found that out many, many years ago.
Oh, TV laugh tracks, you mean? Yeah.
Yeah, the laugh track.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And come to find out the whole thing is being done in a room somewhere, and they throw in all the laugh tracks. And
there's no audience.
To think that's funny.
No live audience. But you go into a movie theater and watch the live audience laugh at things
scary.
That are not remotely humorous. It's an old expression. You've all heard it. At the root of all comedy is tragedy. Something unfortunate happens to somebody and you laugh. Ha, 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 ha.
Yeah,
well,
you're
now
right.
It's vicious what they laugh about.
Course. And now, of course, it moves from there into the insane. Now, what we're seeing is the movies about gang wars and all the silly nonsensical crap that's being poured into movies for young people to watch. It's purposely being done to destroy youth and to destroy the moral culture of a of a country as it's being taken over. And I've known that for a long time. I've been talking about it for a long time. Did you ever see that quote by Julian Huxley that's on my website? You go to my website and the button says research. Hit the research button and go to the box that says quote. There's some really interesting quotes there.
Okay, I'll do it. We'll take a look at some of those when we come right back with the amazing Jordan Maxwell, who's been a friend of all of us for over a half century now. Be right back. Jordan. Click on Jordan Maxwell's name. He's, for some reason, in the second guest position up there. He ought to be in third, but it's all right. He's here. And we're going to go to his site. And, all right, everybody should be getting over there about now. And, okay. So, tell us where to go again.
Okay, so you go to my website, and at the top you will see research. But
got it. Right
hit
in the middle.
The research button.
Yep.
And go to the boxes, and one says quotes of interest.
Right. Third row, quotes. Right side.
Yep.
And table of contents. Page 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
Yeah, go to page 3.
I didn't get there yet. Now I'm there. All right.
Go to page 3.
Right.
And go to entry 7, which is the second one on that page.
Got it.
And here is a quote from a book called The New Totalitarians by Roland Humphrey. And in it, he's talking about Julian Huxley from England, a quote from Julian Huxley. And it says, as political and economic freedom diminishes, sexual freedom tends compensatingly to increase. And the dictator, unless he needs cannon fodder and families for which to colonize empty and conquered territories, the dictator will do well to encourage that freedom in conjunction with the freedom to daydream under the influence of dope, the movies, and the radio, and it will help to reconcile his subjects to the servitude, which is now their fate.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Go back to page 1.
All right.
And the very first quote is, I come across this many years ago. This is Sir Alex Fraser Taylor. Taylor. And it says, the average age of the world's greatest civilizations has been 200 years. These nations have progressed through this sequence. They start from bondage to spiritual faith, from spiritual faith to great courage, from great courage to liberty, from liberty to abundance, from abundance to selfishness, from selfishness to complacency, from complacency to apathy, from apathy back to dependence, and from dependence back to bondage.
Boy,
so it's a cycle.
And where, ladies and gentlemen, are we? About from dependency back again to bondage. We're just about to step through that door.
That's it. One more step, and we'll finally finish with America, freedom, liberty, and justice. It's all gone. And all I have said in the past is just watch the television shows and all the news programs and all the big shots on the major networks. Remember their names and remember their faces, all the Tom Brokaws and all of the major network news people, the Walter Cronkites. Just remember their faces and their names. because when you wake up and find out your country has been completely destroyed and mm-hmm. there's no longer any freedom or any hope for the human race, just remember it was these people that entertained you all the time knowing what they were doing. They were being paid to entertain you while your country and your family and your life was being destroyed in your great republic. These were the people who were paid money to keep you entertained. So just remember who your enemies really are, and all you need to do is go turn on television and turn the sound off and watch these talking heads and realize that they're being paid large salaries, large amounts of money every year to manipulate and to exploit you. And I had a friend who worked on one of the major stations here in Los Angeles as a newsman, and he came to visit my office, and he was telling me that in order to get the job with this very impressive job as a nightly newsman on one of the networks, he had to sign an affidavit of some kind that said that if he says anything that is not on that idiot box, that he could be arrested. That was he had to give up all of his rights of freedom as an American to get that job, because if he said anything on the air that was not on the prompter, teleprompter, he could be arrested. And I was just amazed at that.
Wow.
That's how far gone it really is. So anyway, that's
why you're right,
our
Jordan.
Country.
And then there are, I see YouTube clips of these. I guess every country has one now. Britain has Talent, I think it is, and then American Idol, which I've never seen an episode of American Idol. I assume it's the same kind of thing.
It's the same thing, yeah.
But what they're inculcating into the young, mindless droids that we call children is that the ultimate and truly only worthy and admirable goal that they should strive for is the goal of celebrity. That's the message. Now, people know they can't get it, but they certainly can yearn for it. And that yearning is what keeps them completely misdirected from anything of substance and significance. And the latest story out of England, I don't know if you saw this one. I just put it up yesterday or the day before. Young people listen to rock music, okay? Do you think, this is a rhetorical statement, do you think, folks, that they listen to the music that they particularly find interesting and fun and neat? No. 75% of the young people in England listen to music that their peers tell them is neat. Peers decide what is popular, and if you don't listen to it, you're gone.
That's projection.
Sure is.
Talked about that.
No, it's amazing, projection.
It is.
No, and it's all fear-based. It's fear-driven. If I don't listen to this kind of music and wow, that's really cool music, I'm out. I'm out. And I don't want to be out.
No. No children want to be left out. They want to be loved
by
their peers.
That's what that No Child Left Behind meant, really, didn't it?
Yeah.
Back in a minute with Jordan. Okay, and we're back with Jordan.
Yes.
And that quote by Alex Fraser is amazing. Go ahead.
I'd like to talk a little bit about the tonight. That's a very special night. It's Passover.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to talk a little bit about Passover and give the audience an understanding of where Passover comes from.
Please do.
Let's start out with understanding that when the first day of summer, first of all, I should say that all of the religious concepts and ideas that are expressed in Judaism and Christianity are from the Northern Hemisphere. That's important. all of our teachings and understandings and theology that in Judaism and Christianity comes from the Northern Hemisphere. We don't have anything in Judaism or Christianity that pertains to the Aztecs, the Mayas, the Incas, and all of that. So understanding that our religion comes from the Northern Hemisphere. Well, for the first day of summer, the very first day in the Northern Hemisphere of summer, the sun is as high in the northern heavens as it's going to get. It's not going any further north than on the first day of summer. So it's directly overhead in the Northern Hemisphere. Then each day it moves 1 degree southward, and 90 days later, or 90 degrees later, it's halfway going south, it's halfway there. And so the sun, which was standing, is now falling, and it's falling toward winter. So we call the 90 degrees and the 90 days, which is 3 months, we call that fall, because the sun was standing, now it's falling. And so 90 days later, or 90 degrees later, the sun has finally hit the bottom. It's gone south as far as it's going to go. And so on December 22nd, it reaches the lowest point in the southern sky as it's going to go. It will go no further than December 22nd. Then for the 22nd, the 23rd, and the 24th, those 3 days, the sun does not go further south, and it does not move back northward. It stays exactly where it is for 3 days. So the ancient people said that the sun died for 3 days, and it was dead for 3 days. Then on December 25th, the sun in the southern sky moves 1 degree northward. And therefore, U.S. Navy and the Royal Navy will tell you through their instruments that the sun actually moved 1 degree. And so anything that was dead for 3 days is now born again. So we celebrate God's Son's birthday on December 25th, because the sun now moved 1 degree northward, which means it's on its annual journey back to the Northern Hemisphere. So as it works its way back another 90 days, or another 90 degrees coming back to us, it crosses over the equator on the first day of what we call the equinox. So it crosses over the equator, and so in the ancient world, especially in Egypt, they said that when you died, they always used the word passed over or crossed over.
Got it.
And so you passed over into the next world. So when the sun, and we say that even today, when grandmother dies, we say she passed last night, or they passed on, or they passed away. Well, so when the sun passes over the equator coming back to us, happily, to bring our spring, we say that the sun has crossed over the equator, and so we celebrate. It's called the Passover, because the sun has passed over the equator and is now fully back into the Northern Hemisphere. So the ancient people celebrated something called the Passover. The Passover is simply the sun passing over from the depth of winter, coming back to the Northern Hemisphere, bringing our spring. And this is why the Passover is always celebrated on a specific day to begin spring. And so it's the prelude to the whole spring celebration. Now, of course, the Christians cannot have anything to do with that, because that's a Jewish holiday, the sun passing over.
Right.
So the Christians have their holiday, and it's called Resurrection of the Sun. A God's Son is resurrected, or Easter. And so the Christians go out on Sunday morning and watch the sun come up in the morning, and they all are waiting for the rising sun. And so it becomes known as the Easter sunrise service, because they're watching the sun rise over the equator, which is bringing the Passover.
Uh-huh.
So the whole entire story of Easter and Passover, which are the exact same celebrations, Jewish and Christian, is nothing more than sun worship.
Now, if you folks have sharp memories and have seen the film Zeitgeist, you might not only remember and recognize and recall a very similar description in that film, but the voice that did the narration in that film is the same voice you're hearing right now. Well done.
And I was amazed when that thing came out because I had no idea about
no.
it.
No, surprise.
I knew nothing about it.
Well, fortunately, you're in the union and you were compensated appropriately.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yes, sir. And, I'm still waiting. So, I know that some of my stuff, a lot of it has been used over the years in motion pictures because, I don't know if I may have told you this before, but, you know, back in the 70s, through the 70s and into the early 80s, I used to go to a lot of the studios at night and do slide presentations on the, on the sound stages. I'd get in the back way, and they'd get me in, and I would set up a camera and a projector, and I would do slide presentations for the working class people, not the officials, but just the working class people of the studio. They would have me come at night, and it was just fun doing lectures on the Knights Templars and the Illuminati and secret societies and Bible codes and so today, of course, all of that kind of thing I was talking about back in the early 70s is now finally in Hollywood, big time. But there was a lot of interest even back then among the people who worked in the studio. I'm just amazed watching how this whole thing is evolving now.
How did Scientology make such a big dent in the Hollywood community? What's up with that?
Well, it's hard to tell, but I'll tell you what. L. Ron Hubbard, actually, if you go back to, what was his name, the television show, there was a TV show, and I got to tell you about this, it's interesting, in relation to L. Ron Hubbard.
Okay, hang on a sec.
Yeah.
Do it right after the break with Jordan as we continue our conversation on Passover. Be right back. Okay, and we're back with Jordan. By the way, in featured stories at Rents.com, scroll down till you see Jordan's name, and just there are five little tidbits that he sent along that I put together in a couple of titles. Well worth taking a look at. Very interesting. All right.
And I'm going to send you some other. I'm going to send you some more. I've got them waiting right here. I just haven't had a chance to get them to you.
Fun.
So we'll send you some more. Anyway, I was talking about Scientology.
Yeah.
Merv Griffin, many years ago, was a great show. He used to have a television interview show. And he had on William Bletchley, the writer, the author of The Exorcist. And this was quite a few years ago, back in the late 60s, I guess. But he had on William Bletchley, the author and the director of the movie, Exorcist. And Merv was asking him, where did you get all of this information and all of these stories that are so horrible and frightening?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, well, I work with the CIA mind control department, and we've been working on this kind of stuff for many years as a department at the CIA that works with the demonic, the depravity of the demonic world, the occult stuff that's going on in the world. Obviously, the CIA is involved in that kind of stuff. in that particular department.
This was William Peter Blatty,
the
writer who wrote The Exorcist, Blatty. He was.
Yes.
I do remember this now, that there was a CIA connection.
Yeah. And he said, this is the kind of stuff we at the CIA have been working on for many years, this connection with the occult, perfecting it. And so Merv Griffin said, well, there's another man that worked with you in that department. Would you like to tell the audience who he is? And he said, yeah, that was L. Ron Hubbard from Scientology, worked with me on these subjects. So that's interesting. So there's a whole world of occultism. I mean, really depraved. If you watch the movie Exorcist, that kind of stuff is actually, in fact, going on in our country. This kind of stuff, and even at the highest levels.
Now, that dealt with the exorcism of the demonic spirits and a little girl. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, we don't have to go too much further. And here's the technique again. What have we been overwhelmed with, deluged with for the past couple of weeks? Catholic priest and the papacy of Rome, pedophilia stories.
Yep.
Hundreds of them. So now people are to the point where they have short attention spans anyway. They don't have tolerance to remain sensitized to things very long, so they're desensitized to this whole Catholic Church, 1,000-year-old or 2,000-year-old long, practically, 2,000-year, what, I don't know how long.
1,600 years.
Yeah, 1,600 years of pedophilia. I mean, that's the whole boys' choir thing. All that, they don't get married. The nuns are lesbians. Did you ever see the movie? Excuse me, but this was a very surprising movie to me that it ever got made, and you can hardly find it. It's called The Devils, and Oliver Reed starred in it. It was about the medieval church and the horrible abuse and ritual mutilations and everything else that went on back then.
Oh Lord, yes.
Called The Devils, Ken Russell film. The great English director Ken Russell made it, called The Devils. If you can find it, you should see it.
No, I've looked for it.
It was a stunner. Here we have, these are real life movies that are going on now. How many hundreds of little boys do some of these priests get their hands on?
Oh, I know. But you see, that's what that's actually the basis for the church in the Middle Ages, was based on sex and all of the symbolism in the Christian church were based on sexual symbols. The church steeples were phallic symbols.
Well, it's like the Egyptian obelisks.
The Egyptian obelisk was a male phallic, and it connected to the female ovaries of the Oval Office.
Mm-hmm.
And
see, that's in Washington, D.C., though.
Yeah. Well, that's even worse.
Yeah, well, you got George Washington's last erection.
Yep, and it connects directly to the Oval Office or the ovary.
Straight line, boom.
Yeah, and as a matter of fact, if you're going to be a minister, you have to go to a seminary.
No, that's seminary, Jordan.
That's
Sorry.
Right, but that's where it comes from.
Of course
go
it
to
does.
Any good, go to any good dictionary.
I know.
Yeah, go to any good dictionary and look up the word seminary and see where it comes from. It will tell you it's a sexual symbol. And,
of course it is.
Yeah. And so, but I'm telling you, the whole sexual symbolism and the presence of perverted sex in religion is just, it's astounding how much is actually there you didn't know. I mean, the very story in Genesis where Jacob lies down on a stone and falls asleep. And is given a dream, and he wakes up and he says that this stone represents the God of Israel, and because God is in this stone. Well, then you find out the stone, if you go back to the reference work and look it up, you'll find the stone was an elongated phallic stone in which the ancient peoples would pour oil on the phallic stone, representing lubricating the male phallic before sex. The entire superstructure of the Bible is written in such a way as to hide all of the sexual symbolism that's replete in both the Old and New Testament. There's so much there that people don't know, and they're not told. And I've done some of this. I've done some of this on videos. A classic example is I just came out with a new one called Moses, the Lawgiver. And people talk about Moses in the churches. They have no idea what wait till you see my video on the research I've done on Moses. There's a world of knowledge about Moses people have never heard. It's been in your face. It's in the Bible. It's in the Jewish reference work. It's all there, but most people just go along to get along, and all they know is what they've been told. Nobody does the research. So get the video, Moses, the Lawgiver. You'll see what I mean.
All of Jordan's videos are timeless treasures of true knowledge and data and wisdom that you could spend years trying to assemble, and you'd never come up with it like he has. He spent over 50 years at it.
Yeah, well, I get a lot of people asking me, well, where do I start with it, and where do I start with that, and how do I do this? And I'm saying, why don't you just go to my website and read everything on it, and then go through all the links, and, by the time you get through all of my website, you'll figure out how to start doing research, where things are. Because on virtually everything I put on my website, I always put footnotes. All you got to do is click on the footnotes, and it takes you to the encyclopedias or reference works where to read, to do the research yourself. Very
right.
Simple.
Sure.
So I don't want people thinking that I'm saying something. I always put footnotes. Here's where you can go read it for yourself.
Well, look at the pieces that Jordan sent to share with all of you at Rents.com. Look for Jordan Maxwell under Featured Stories. And, before I get there, let me just take this moment as I look at the art at the top of the page. We are holding our spring support drive, and it's very important that all of you out there who really care reach out and try to help any organization that's doing the kind of work you think needs to be done now, and we think we're doing that. We're doing the best we can, but we could use any support you can send, and that's what that little thing at the top with that lone tree standing in the middle of a shattered forest is about.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
so,
I see it.
Yeah,
that
if you go down,
makes the point. Yeah.
I hope so. Well, I wrote underneath it, we don't accept the storm of change to our country, do you?
Yeah, that's great. That's beautiful.
Okay, under Jordan's name, you'll see the second story is Illuminati Eye and Sunrise Right in Your Face. Click on that. Take a look. This is amazing.
Yeah, there's a lot of strange stuff right there in your face. And like I said, I've got some other really sparkling stuff to send you. So,
well, you have volumes of it.
Yeah.
But there's the eye right there. It's just staring right at you.
And also in the ABC towers.
Oh, that's even more obscene. That's so obvious. Jeez, you look at that from up above. Man.
And the two ABC towers are triangles. When you put them together, superimpose one on the other, of course,
right,
it becomes the Star of David.
Yep. Look at that eye in that pyramid.
And then above it, if you go above that to the street above it.
Right in the middle of the boulevard.
Right in the middle of the boulevard is another eye, and there's a water's spout, which is a round water spout. And at night, it's just a big eye. And
you go by and stare at that, do you, Jordan?
Say that again.
You go by and look at that at night.
Oh,
sometimes?
yeah. But I've gone out there. When I first was at the hotel, I gave a lecture at the hotel, and I was up on the top floor, and I looked down, and it shocked me. There it is, right in your face. And also the building right next to it, you'll see the high rise next to it. The parking area of the high rise is a big all-seeing eye. You drive into the eye of the parking lot. It's everywhere.
It is. Such coincidence.
Well. Anyway.
Thank you, Jordan.
I would say to everyone, just go to my website, jordanmaxwell.com, and check it all out.
What a treasury. It's all there. Thank you, my friend. Talk to you soon.
Talk to you. Bye-bye.
Good night. The amazing Jordan Maxwell, the master of symbolism and so much more. All right, thanks for being here. We'll be right back with you tomorrow night in 21 hours. See you then.